This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. As summer arrives in Wisconsin, many utility companies are investing in new solar energy projects in and around the Cooley region. Last February, Dairyland Power Cooperative announced their plans to purchase power from 12 new solar facilities in western Wisconsin. And Xcel Energy released their plans to build new solar gardens near Eau Claire and La Crosse. Joining us today to talk about how these projects are changing the local utility landscape are Craig Harms, Business Development Manager for Dairyland Power Cooperative, Brian Rood, Vice President of External and Member Relations for Dairyland Power, and Mike Caro, Community Service Manager for Xcel Energy. You know, I just want to start by, you know, asking you, Brian, why solar?
Well, we're moving towards a more diverse resource base generally. A lot of reasons for that. Business reasons, just makes common sense to have more diversity. Members are asking us to move in that direction, and we're a member-driven organization. And I think the key thing is that solar has finally become more competitive from a cost and technology standpoint to make it worth investing from a utility and a community perspective.
And Mike, I would pose the same question for you. You know, why is Xcel interested in investing in solar?
Well, I would echo some of the things that Brian mentioned. We've had a lot of customers, both business and residential customers, ask us for other options. We already have a very successful wind source program out there where people can buy into wind as part of their portfolio. And with solar costs coming down, we felt it was a good time to offer something directly to our customers on solar. We also have been doing utility scale solar throughout our service territory, and I can see that continuing to increase in the future.
Mike, you guys are investing in solar gardens, right? Which are a little bit different than just, the typical solar array. Can you explain what a solar garden is?
Well, what we plan to do is initially put in two solar gardens, and which basically is a garden full of solar panels. And there'll be over 3,000 panels per garden. We'll have one in La Crosse County and one in Eau Claire County. Each one of these panels is 310 watts. Businesses or residential customers can buy into a subscription for that, so a proportion of the output of that garden. And so they'll pay upfront money. The money will be due by the end of the year, and then we'll start this garden going in 2017. So it's a little different concept. We haven't done anything like this. It's labeled as a pilot project for us. It's been approved by the Public Service Commission. We're going to see how it goes. And then throughout the next 25 years, then a customer will get credit back on their bill depending on their proportion of the output that particular month.
And, you know, what are some of the motivating factors for people to invest in a solar garden?
They vary. Some people, particularly some residential customers, just want to be more green. Right now, our portfolio is very diverse. We've got a real good mix of renewables, non-carbon producing fuels or that produce power for our customers. But there's some customers that want to do just a little bit more. A lot of homes or businesses really are not set up for a solar panel to put it on their roof or to put it in their land. So this is an opportunity for them to actually own some output without having to do it in their own backyard, so to speak. But this will be close enough. They can drive by it. They can see it. Maybe it'll be a webcam type thing hooked up. And the other thing that we're seeing, particularly with our business customers, is a lot of them have renewable goals. They want to be more green. They want to tell their customers that. This is a way to do that in a fairly simple way without having to do all the project planning type work to put something at their site. And so we've had some interest from some of our larger customers, even some corporate customers that maybe even their headquarters aren't here, but they have corporate goals that they've been told that they have to have a certain percentage renewable.
And Craig, can you talk a little bit about the projects that Dairyland are starting and investing in? You know, how is that different from what Xcel's doing?
Well, Dairyland, of course, is a generation and transmission cooperative, a wholesale power supplier, and we have 25 member electric cooperatives, 18 of which are in the state of Wisconsin. And part of our renewable portfolio is the utility scale solar projects, a dozen of them, which are proposed, and we're continuing to take. We've got some negotiations ongoing on perhaps some additional. And then we do have a couple of projects that are already operational. But these projects provide power to those distribution electric cooperatives that are technically the retail service providers out there. And then those cooperatives also have their may have their own community solar projects. So some of them are also involved in projects similar to what Mike just explained. And there's about half a dozen in Wisconsin that have projects to date. And we expect that our latest plan of additional utility scale solar will result in additional community solar projects too, maybe six or seven more of those projects. So those are those continue to be of interest to our member cooperatives, member consumers out there. So.
And Dairyland, you know, is not actually building the solar arrays that are that were announced in February, correct? You guys are have a purchasing agreement.
Correct. We have contracted with two different national solar developers. One is Grow Solar, and they're out of Vermont. And the second one is SoCor Energy, which is actually out of Chicago. So they will develop, install, own, operate, and maintain the solar facility. And Dairyland intends to purchase the power from those facilities. So we have a power purchase agreement with those developers.
And Brian, you know, what's the motivation for taking that approach as opposed to building your own arrays?
One of the things that has really promoted renewable energy at the federal level are the existence of tax credits. Wind enjoys a hefty tax subsidy, as does solar at the federal level. The problem for Dairyland is that we're a cooperative. We're not a for-profit company. So we don't have the opportunity to take advantage of tax credits. So if we were to build these projects on our own, we'd be at a competitive disadvantage. So by contracting with a for-profit provider, they can take the advantage of the tax credits, and our members get a lower lower cost on their energy as a result of that. So it's a suitable outcome. You know, I think if there were no tax credits, we probably would be building these ourselves. But as long as at the end of the day we get the projects done and the members get the benefit of the tax credits at the federal level through this process, it works for us and we'll continue to do that. The federal government is debating all the time the future of renewable tax credits. They put together a package last year where over time the wind and solar tax subsidies will drop. But as long as they're here, we certainly have to take advantage of them along with our competitors.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about new opportunities to invest in solar energy in western Wisconsin. We're here with Brian Rood, Vice President of External and Member Relations for Dairyland Power Cooperative, Craig Harms, Business Development Manager for Dairyland Power, and Mike Caro, Community Service Manager for Xcel Energy. And Brian, we've been talking about, you know, the economic positives or benefits of solar, but, you know, what are some of the environmental benefits of solar energy?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that our industry, the utility industry, is moving towards a much more balanced portfolio, and Dairyland is certainly part of that. As Mike said, Xcel is one of the national leaders in developing renewable energy. I think it reflects the broad concern about climate and CO2. It obviously, if you can add solar, wind, or even nuclear over a fossil fuel burning plant, you're going to have a better environmental outcome. For us, it also reflects business diversity. Historically, utilities were very dependent on one or two sources of fuel, and with that comes risks. If you have a coal plant dependency, for example, you have risks of rail delivery, and other kinds of risks. And so the more diverse we can make our portfolio, the better. And then again, I think it is this growing public interest in renewable energy, and we very much want to meet that interest. And the community solar gardens, as Mike and Craig have explained, the beauty of them is that the people who really want to do this have an opportunity to do it without doing it on their own roof or in their own backyard. And some people may not be in a place where they have a suitable location for their own solar. They may be, you know, in an apartment building, but they can still participate through the community solar garden process. So I think we all know in the industry that we are going to increasingly get more green as time goes on. But there is a balance, and we need reliability, too. And I think one of our critical roles as public utilities, whether it's a cooperative like Darylin or an investor-owned like Xcel, is that at the end of the day, we have to keep the lights on 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So we're going to keep, for the near term, and I would say by that, you know, the next couple decades probably, or three, you're still going to have fossil fuel in the mix because the sun doesn't shine all the time, the wind does not blow all the time, but you want to turn on your computer and your hairdryer at any time of the day or night.
Yeah, and Mike, is there ever going to be a future when we rely solely on solar or other sustainable, or, you know, is it that unrealistic given that Wisconsin, you know, gets cold and dreary and not as sunny in the winter times?
I'm not sure what will happen in the next 50 years, if there'll be hydrogen cells or new technologies. Brian is correct that, I mean, at least for the foreseeable future, out in the 2030s, a lot of utilities still will have a baseload component, either whether that's coal or natural gas or nuclear or something like that. I think you'll see more and more renewable type products come into the mix, whether they're a customer program or a utility scale. For the foreseeable future, I think they'll continue to be base load. It just that'll be less than before. For example, even you know Xcel is the number one wind utility in the country, and we've been doing that for 12 years. But we also have backup generation in the form of natural gas units that can be brought on in very quick notice in case the wind is not there. So you're going to see you have to have that kind of backup plan so you can be reliable. And I think for the foreseeable future, you will continue to see that.
I think one game changer hope could be, you read this in our industry press all the time, is the question of battery storage or other kinds of storage. And as Mike said, if the technology improved dramatically, that would be a game changer. Right now, storage is prohibitively expensive and difficult in a big way. And as long as that's true, you can't depend on renewable energy all the time because it's just the most reliable form of renewable is hydro, which we have and Xcel has. And that, you know, can be a pretty much a 24-hour-a-day resource, but the options to expand that in Wisconsin are very limited. There aren't a lot of appropriate spots for it. Hydro has its own challenges with the fish population and other things. So I think we all will say, and I think the public has to accept the fact that if we want the quality of life we have and the economic opportunities we have, we're going to have to depend on fossil fuels for quite some time to come. But we are moving to a much greener mix, and I think the public will appreciate that.
The capability of storing solar power, I know, is you know, a big piece of the conversation for private solar enterprises too. You know, Craig, do you think that as we develop this battery technology, that we're going to see more you know, privately owned solar operations as well?
Battery technology is coming, and it's come a long way already. And as the efficiency and the economics improve, we're going to see more and more private enterprises investing in that, and I think incorporating that as part of their business. So it's coming.
And aside from battery, and I know that, you know, Mike, you mentioned that some people's houses just aren't at a good spot for solar. You know, what are other limitations to people being able to own their own, you know, private solar panels and would make maybe a solar garden more ideal?
Well, there's a few of them out there. Number one is the orientation of your roof. Where are your trees? How much land do you have? Do you want to, if we get 12 inches of snow, do you want to be up there with a broom trying to get the snow off your panels? The one thing that we're discovering that's resonated with some of our residential customers, By doing the approach that we're doing with this pilot project, we're able to get economies of scale. So the prices are lower than if you or I were to go out there and just decide to get some panels and put them on our house tomorrow. So there's some economics in there for the ones that want to do this type of a technology. And some people just don't like the sight of them also. So this is, like I said, ours is going to be about 7 acres worth of solar panels out in the country and facing south. And if people really want to see them, they can drive by and see them. But they don't have to go, and even just the project management of trying to hook it up and do it yourself, I think it's just resonated with some customers. We're hoping that continues.
And Brian, you know, where are the locations that you guys are looking at for your new solar facilities?
Actually, we've got them around the state, and the ones that have been announced so far are in 12 different locations, basically in our member cooperatives. Locally, the closest ones here in La Crosse are Liberty Pole in Vernon County and Hillsborough in Vernon County. Also Arcadia and Trempealeau County. So we have some here immediate, but
Viola.
Viola is Richland County. I should have remembered that because we had the groundbreaking on the Viola project. Mm-hmm. So those installations range from 0.5 megawatt to 2.5 megawatts in scale. So they're pretty sizable projects. And we've done this with working with our distribution co-ops. We also did the two projects that Craig mentioned, one in Orinoco near Rochester, one in Westby. Those are up and running. Those are company-owned projects that we had done earlier. We also have announced a small schools project. We are doing a solar project for the DeSoto Public Schools, the Alma Public Schools, and the Cochrane Fountain City Schools. And the reason for those locations is those three schools are all adjacent to our power plants in Genoa and Alma. So that'll be an educational opportunity for the kids there, but we're also doing an economic benefit, hopefully, for those school districts by putting solar projects there. So we have a lot of different locations around the state. And as Craig mentioned, we're also in Minnesota and Iowa and Illinois. We also have somewhere in the neighborhood, Craig, of 800 small DG systems on our lines. Right. And those are member-owned. Those are ones where people have put in their own solar or wind. So that gives you an idea of the size and scale and scope of what members, for our perspective, are doing right now already.
And the 2.5 megawatt project in Price County that's part of our portfolio here would be the largest solar array in the state. How long that'll last, I don't know, because somebody else is going to come along and build a bigger one, but stands today.
At the beginning of this year, there were 25 megawatts of commercial solar in Wisconsin. So I think our announcement and Xcel's announcement really puts Western Wisconsin in the forefront. We are going to be leading the state. When you think of how many people live in this state, and Xcel and Dairylin Power's territory is not that large a share of the state, we're the two leaders right now in solar development. We're very proud of that.
Even the 2 1-megawatt, and we have potential for another 1-megawatt garden in Wisconsin, at the time anyways, was the largest investor-owned utility community solar program out there for the state of Wisconsin.
That's Mike Harrow, Community Service Manager for Xcel Energy, here with us today to talk about recent investments in solar energy in and around the Cooley region. Also joining our conversation is Craig Harms, Business Development Manager for Dairylin Power Cooperative, and Brian Root, Vice President of External and Member Relations for Dairylin Power. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. You know, Mike, we've been talking about how Western Wisconsin is really leading the state in solar. Why is that?
Well, I think part of it is just, you know, as Brian mentioned, you know, Dairylin's local headquarters is here in La Crosse. Xcel Energy is located in western and northwestern Wisconsin. Our parent company is in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. They've done a lot of work in solar, huge programs. A lot of those programs have been driven by their public utility commission. We've looked at what they're doing, and we've worked with our commission to try to come up with a program that will work and not affect the other customers negatively. So, you know, I just think, I don't know if it was the aligning of the stars or whatever, but Dairylin's pretty progressive on what they're doing. They have a goal to be more, have their portfolio be more green and renewable. We're along the same lines, and we're trying to come up with products that our customers say that they want. So, I just think it's a good situation for Western Wisconsin. It's brought the awareness up. It ended up, I think, by happenstance that we both announced the same day. But I think maybe that was good because it really brought the awareness to the subject.
And Brian, did you have any more to add about, you know, why Western Wisconsin is really leading the state?
From a business model standpoint, cooperatives have one of our advantages is we have a governing board that's made up of our members. And so they can make decisions literally in one or two months. Mike and Excel have to go through the Wisconsin Public Service Commission, which is a lengthy process and a public process and a vote process. And as Mike mentioned, they're the first to do that in Wisconsin with the community solar for investor owns. So now that they've broken the ground, maybe others will. But for us, our members really like the community solar concept. They just, for all the advantages we've talked about having a central location, there are a couple other advantages. One is safety. You have all the projects together in one location. It can be much safer for both the owner of the solar and for electrical workers going out. They know where it is, and from a maintenance standpoint, and as Craig talked about, the cost benefit of buying together drives the cost down. So all that came together, and our board was like, yeah, we think this really makes sense, and we'll offer it. In the case of community solar to our members, in the case of our utility solar, we just felt the time was right to proceed on this, and our board, our elected board, made up of one representative from each of our 25 co-ops, approved the process. And Craig has led that process in terms of the RFP. We were shocked at how competitive that RFP was. I think, Craig, we got over 100 proposals.
We had 30 proposals and 100 over 100 locations. Different iterations or options were in those proposals.
Yeah, and the price was much more competitive than we even expected when we issued the request for proposals. So for us, it's driven by our board, made easy by our board, and our members' passion and appetite for the projects right now.
In fact, we found that there, at least in our case, there wasn't a lot of difference in doing a dozen smaller projects than one large project. The cost was very comparable, which was all the more reason for us to go forward with those smaller projects.
And, you know, what is the advantage of doing smaller projects in multiple areas versus one mega solar array?
Well, most importantly, our member consumers, they want that. They like to see that local project. They like to have that project locally. Weather, of course, is a big factor because, when I drove in this morning, it was raining in the northern part of your listening area. But when I got to work, the sun was shining. So, you know, there's that weather variation in different parts of the geography. And then also reliability is a big factor. It's better to have smaller projects scattered around on the infrastructure. There's less impact on that infrastructure, and it's a lot more efficient, a lot more reliable for us.
And Mike, you've mentioned that Xcel's solar arrays are going to be built kind of out in the country. You know, what makes the perfect location for a solar array? You know, what do you guys look for when you're looking for sites?
Well, we're looking for flat ground or ground that maybe faces to the south. You know, I think the one in La Crosse County is going to be more rural, but I believe the one in Eau Claire County will not. We're still working on some of the final details of those locations. We want to site them near a distribution line so you can take that power and put it onto the grid. You don't want vandalism or things like that with these solar panels. And normally I don't think there's a whole lot of problems there. But we went out on a bid process, too, and we got different bids in. And this is the most economical one, and we thought it was best for our customers.
Mike Harrow, Community Service Manager for Xcel Energy, is here with us today to talk about new solar projects beginning this summer in Western Wisconsin. Also joining us is Craig Harms, Business Development Manager for Dairyland Power Cooperative, and Brian Rood, Vice President of External and Member Relations for Dairyland Power. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the future of solar energy in the Cooley region. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about recent investments in solar energy in and around the Cooley region. Both Dairyland Power Cooperative and Xcel Energy announced last February new plans to build solar facilities in Eau Claire, La Crosse, and other communities in western Wisconsin. Joining us today to talk about how these projects are impacting area communities are Craig Harms, Business Development Manager for Dairyland Power Cooperative, Brian Rood, Vice President of External and Member Relations for Dairyland Power Cooperative, and Mike Caro, Community Service Manager for Xcel Energy. You know, Vernon Electric Cooperative, as we were just talking about during the break, was the first to have a solar garden in the state. And, you know, they sold their panels in, I think, less than a month is what it was, right? And Mike, you know, how has been the community response to Xcel's plan for solar gardens? You know, are we seeing the same kind of energy around it?
It's hard to compare the two projects. You know, we continue to work with customers. Ours is a large project. It's 1 megawatt. That's 1,000 kilowatts. That's a big chunk of power. And to make this go and to fill this up is really going to involve having some fairly good-sized business customers sign in. And we announced this in mid-February. And you have to realize, you know, when we announce it doesn't necessarily correspond with the budgets for a lot of these business customers, because some of these are they're fairly substantial investments. And so we have we're working with many customers right now, and each one is in a different sales of the different portion of the sales process or the decision process. I'm confident we're going to get there, and we have some very strong prospects out there that are in the decision process as we speak. And then we continue to look with some of our different customers to see if they're interested in this concept. So it's a learning process on our end and a learning process on the customer's end too, as they, you know, bring their CFO in and their operations manager and try to figure out how it fits into their renewable goals. Like I mentioned before, some customers have, you know, these corporate goals that are set upon them. So we continue to work with it. I'm confident we're going to get there. There's a lot of work being done behind the scenes, and I think you'll see some announcements coming up fairly soon of some substantial customers that have signed on to our program.
And Brian, you know, are you aware of other utility companies that might be looking at investing in solar outside of western Wisconsin?
Reading the national press, I think everybody in the country is taking a good look at it. There are certain places where it makes a lot of sense, of course. The Arizonas and New Mexicos of this world, and they've had pretty good penetration already because the sun may shine some places more than others. In Wisconsin, I think all of the utilities have expressed some sort of interest. There are different levels of it. For example, we represent two of the utility models, investor-owned and cooperatives. There are also municipal electric utilities in Wisconsin, and some of them are launching community solar in their area. So I think there is a lot of growing national interest in solar, helped along by the tax credits, helped along by the concern over CO2 and environmental issues generally. So I think you're going to see growth across the board. And I think for the cooperatives, as I mentioned, our business model, the real advantage we have is the decision-making goes much faster. It's much closer to home, and so we can respond to our members much more quickly. But you're going to see a lot of interest in this area for all utilities.
And, you know, from another perspective, Craig, I mean, are we seeing more companies starting up in Wisconsin or in this area that are actually building this technology?
Certainly, there are local installers. They may not all have the capability to build utility-scale solar, but there are a number of installers around the state. And certainly, when we issued our request for proposals, we had some in-state proposals as well, and some of those were very competitive. And certainly, I think we'll be doing business with some of those. I think the companies that we did select, Grow Solar and SoCor Energy, will be utilizing local labor on these projects. And I've already had some calls from some of these local installers saying, gee, we'd be very interested in working on that. That's kind of our niche. How do we get involved? And so, yeah, we really want to see those people get those jobs and perform that work for us.
And Brian, do you think that this is a possible area of growth?
I do. I think, you know, given the fact that there is growing interest in both utility scale and community size solar, there are going to be some jobs here in the future. I know the WTC and Chippewa Valley Tech and other tech schools are working very much to moving into programs where they're training technicians and developers of solar and wind. And I think that will continue, those areas will continue to grow. As Craig mentioned, there are also subcontractor jobs. You know, local contractors get jobs moving the dirt, building fences, things that are not very technical in nature. One thing with the technical school programs and technical training is we still think it is important to train people in the traditional utility fields of regular plant, fossil fuel plants, and line personnel. The reality is, again, we're going to have the grid around for a long time, and the job of taking care of those lines is very technically challenging, but it pays very well. Some of the best jobs in a lot of communities are the person taking care of keeping the lights on. And so I think we want to see a blend of training. You want some people that are in the solar and wind development area, but you also want to have people that are continuing to work in the other aspects of the business to make sure that it all works together.
And speaking of wind, you know, Mike, I know that you've mentioned that Xcel has definitely invested in wind power. You know, what are kind of the, you know, pros and cons of wind versus solar? I mean, is that a compare contrast kind of situation, or is it a maybe both?
Yeah, I never really think of it as a compare and contrast. It's more of a complementary type thing. What we're trying to do in many utilities is just to diversify their portfolio, like Brian mentioned earlier. And you know, there are areas that are really good for utility-type solar. In fact, our service territory goes down into Texas, New Mexico, Colorado. That's where the majority of our utility-scale solar is going to be, because we just get more bang for our buck down there. The sun is hotter, and they don't have winter like we have up here. And the same token, the wind, and the reason we've really been so involved in wind is our service territory overlays some of the best wind resources in the United States, and that's you know, the western Minnesota, South Dakota area, and that's why we've really been able to take advantage of that and use that wind resource. We will probably never, I would imagine, build utility scale wind farm in Wisconsin, just because we can do it in Minnesota and really have a real good fairly constant wind resource, and actually are doing a lot of research and work with a lot of meteorologists to do wind prediction programs that are being used in other parts of the country right now. So that's pretty exciting.
And what makes Wisconsin not ideal for wind power?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're not ideal. There are areas in Wisconsin that are ideal. It's just that if you look at the maps and the wind speed maps, there's a, I don't know if it's called Buffalo Ridge or Buffalo Range, but there's a very good wind resource in that section of the United States, and that's where. And if you drive west on I-90 and get beyond Rochester, you're going to see a lot of wind turbines. As you keep going west, you get towards the Dakotas. There are just a lot of them. I was there this winter, And particularly at night, it's quite a sight because they all have beacons on them, and you can see it all over both sides of the interstate. And I know Iowa has really been developing a lot of wind turbines also.
I think the difference, roughly, and these numbers might not be perfect for every installation, but the average Wisconsin wind farm is usually around 30% capacity factor. And out in Buffalo Ridge, you might be approaching 60% on average, so twice as much power out of the same turbine. That makes a big deal.
It does. The problem with that is if you want to really go into wind, unfortunately, where we put all the wind farms, there's not many people. So then you have to build transmission to get the power out right into the population centers. And you'll see that if you do go out there, you'll see some pretty new transmission facilities out there transporting that power back into this region. Part of the reason for the CapEx project was to transport some of that renewable energy back towards the population centers here in Wisconsin.
One other comment about siting. Although people like renewables, when it comes to actually siting projects, wind can be very challenging to site. There are projects in Wisconsin that have been proposed that have been held up in neighborhood protests and courts, and we had even locally in Monroe County, county board members recalled over wind farm proposals. A lot of people don't like the visibility of the turbines and the impacts of the turbine on their quality of life. Less opposition, I think, to solar, although one of our projects that we proposed in our initial round at the first round at a local planning committee up north, I won't tell the county, but they voted it down the first time because of neighborhood concerns. Now, I think we've addressed that and solved it, but it's a challenge to build wind in a lot of neighborhoods.
Yeah, Craig, do you want to go into a little bit more detail about some of the, you know, neighborhood concerns that Brian was referencing?
Well, you know, and I think, as Mike will probably tell you, I think there's been a little more experience in Minnesota on solar projects. We don't have a lot of history on solar projects to date, but as more of these installations go in, just like the wind farms, anytime you're putting something that looks industrial in nature in somebody's backyard, you may have somebody that says, that obstructs my view, or I'm not sure that I want that here. Or there may be other reasons. We certainly are trying to protect our farmland out there, our bluff land areas, et cetera. So we try to be very careful in where we site these, and there is a hearing process that we have to go through, a zoning and permitting, et cetera. And so I think this is something we'll encounter more in the future as more and more of these projects go in.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about new opportunities to invest in solar energy in western Wisconsin. We're here with Craig Harms, Business Development Manager for Dairyland Power Cooperative, Brian Rood, Vice President of External and Member Relations for Dairyland Power, and Mike Caro, Community Service Manager for Xcel Energy. And Craig, you know, we're talking about, you know, just all the factors that need to be taken into consideration for siting solar arrays. You know, has Dairyland looked at incorporating solar arrays into other structures? I know that there have been projects in the past of using solar arrays on the site of parking garages and, you know, getting really creative about where to put these panels. You know, what is Dairyland looking at to kind of incorporate that?
The electric cooperatives serve primarily rural areas, so in terms of utility scale solar, we're just as Mike mentioned earlier, you're going to be seeing these put primarily on vacant properties. Of course, when you're incorporating them with local businesses, well, then you're going to see a little more creativity and on roofs and parking lots, on campuses, and then we'll also get a little more creative in how we present these to the public in terms of appearances. But for the most part, from a rural perspective, they'll be on vacant farmland that's out there.
And Mike, you know, has Xcel looked at, incorporating the solar panels that you guys are planning to build in existing structures?
You know, that's a great question. I've had for the past few years a few customers that, and a few contacts that I have that would say, hey, I've got this great roof. You know, let's work on a partnership and put some solar panels up there. Or, I've got this land that might be real good for it. We haven't done it to this point. Like I mentioned earlier, the garden that we're putting up right now covers 7 acres of property. And that's a lot of space. And it's a lot of space when you look at in an urban area, trying to find land is really hard. It's very expensive. So at this point, we don't have plans for that. But, maybe someday in the future that there's some, something that works out where someone can use their roof. I've done a lot in facilities engineering and those type of things. That even putting them all over the roof makes me a little nervous just because of roof penetrations, leaking. A lot of times your mechanical systems are up on the roof. So you really have to have the right application. It may look great initially, saying, boy, I have all this roof space. But I think once you get into the details of it, maybe the devil is in the details on some of those applications.
You mentioned that the Eau Claire location, you're kind of planning to, that won't be as much of a rural site and looking at a more of a, urban area, if you will. What, I guess, about that community is kind of driving you guys towards looking that way?
What we did is when we went out for the request for proposals, we had various proposals and various land parcels that were identified, and that particular one, I believe, is right next to our headquarters. And so our Wisconsin headquarters is located in Eau Claire. And I think, I'm not sure I was involved in the decision process, but I think that will be an advantage to have that type of resource so close to where we house over 1,000 employees. In La Crosse, as most people know, some of us, we're fairly landlocked here between the bluffs and the river. So I wouldn't envision anything like that in La Crosse just because we don't have the land right now. But our garden is going to be very close to La Crosse.
And Brian, we've been talking about how, these investments in solar are definitely becoming more a part of the of our utilities, portfolio. But, what does the future, the immediate future look like? After, these 12 new facilities, maybe more, are coming online for Dairyland, what are next on the list for you guys?
Well, for us, we very much are interested in a natural gas plant, and we're exploring some options on that. Part of the reason for that is we're quite dependent on coal. And as I mentioned earlier, there are business reasons not to be dependent on any one fuel source. And natural gas has much less of a footprint on CO2 than does coal. So that's probably our major option outside of the renewable field. People keep asking us about new nuclear. That's a long ways away, I think, because the cost of nuclear upfront is very high. You need very large projects, much bigger than Dairyland could afford on our own. And there's always the ongoing issues about spent fuel storage and transportation. So I think for us, it's expand our solar project. We're going to be developing wind in the future. In fact, hopefully we'll have an announcement soon about additional wind on our system. A part of a natural gas plant. Those are the things we need to move forward for the next decade or two in meeting the energy needs of our members. At the same time, we're going to keep our existing coal fleet. We've spent at our plants in Juneau and Alma $300 million in the last 10 years to put every form of pollution control on them imaginable, mercury reduction, particulate matter reduction, sulfur dioxide reduction, and nitrous oxide reduction. And so those plants now are running incredibly clean compared to when they first came online. In the area of particulate matter, for example, which is tiny little pieces of ash, we've reduced almost 100% of the emissions of that. So we're taking care of our existing plants, but it's a balancing act because we know they have a useful life, and we also know that CO2 is an ongoing concern. So that's why the push towards a more diverse resource base as we go, we think makes business sense, and by the time, the next generation is running the operation, or the next two generations, you're going to see a much different mix in the utility field than what you see today.
And I know earlier you mentioned some new projects involved with public schools. Are there any plans to continue, you know, introduce more solar projects at public schools?
We have a lot of interest from schools in this, and one of the reasons we're doing this at our three schools is because they're close to our plant, and that's how we selected them, because you can't do every project, every school that wants one, but there is a lot of interest. I think it's a teaching tool for, you know, the classroom, and they can actually, on an hourly basis, see what energy is being generated, and in some of these cases, we might be able to talk about maintenance and those sorts of things. So it's a teaching tool, also an economic benefit to schools because they're stretched, their budget dollars are very stretched these days. And when you can remove some of the cost of fuel and electricity, it's a benefit. So we're doing it in our closest communities first. I think we'll look at this again in the future, but this is a pretty sizable contribution for those schools. And we'll see how it plays out. We think it has a nifty touch because of all those things associated with it. We'll see how it works.
Mike, I would pose a similar question to you. You know, after these solar gardens start to come into operation, you know, what's next on Xcel's list?
Well, I think what we're going to do in Wisconsin is just to see how these first two go. We've got approval, actually, to add one more if that goes well. We also expect on the corporate level to triple our solar energy that we have on our system by the year 2020. We also expect by year 2020 to have wind make up 24% of our total resource. So those are bold initiatives. We've been really on this mission since 2005. We've converted a lot of our coal plants, either shut them down or converted them to natural gas. We also hope to be 43% carbon-free by 2020. So we're a nation leader in some of those areas for renewables and trying to have a clean, diverse fleet of power supply.
And I know that you talked about how you are already kind of in talks with many businesses about investing in these solar gardens. But, you know, for the average listener, the average person who maybe wants to look at kind of getting involved, are there opportunities for them as well?
Oh, there sure are, yeah. And I didn't mean to bypass some of those details. But like I said, our garden is fairly large, it's a 1 megawatt. But our lowest subscription you can get is 200 watts, which would cost about $350. So for $350, somewhere in there, you can invest in our solar garden and have a portion of that. And then for the next 25 years, you'll get a monthly bill credit based on the output of your 200 watt. Each panel is 310 watts, but you'd be buying 200 watts of that panel. So that's where it starts, anywhere from the 200 watt level up to 400 kilowatts, which would be 40% of the whole garden. There you need, of course, a very large customer to jump on at that level. But no, we've had customers sign up to take the maximum you can sign up is the amount to use at your home or business. We've had customers sign up to take the power from their whole house or a portion, you know, whether it's 25% or 10% or, you know, or 1 kilowatt, which you know, it would be $1,780. But our prices are very competitive at $1,780 per kilowatt to get into this solar garden. And, you know, we had solar power hours. So we had 7 or 8 of them around. We had 2 here in La Crosse, 1 in Sparta. Those are finished, but anyone that wants to go on can go to our Solar Connect community website. Just go on xlenergy.com and then click into the solar section. So we'd love to have more residential customers. We continue to sign them up. It's a very easy system. You can sign up online and get the process going.
What are the savings that you guys are expecting to come from these investments?
It really varies on a couple things. You know, I get that a lot as far as, well, what are the economic benefits of this type of thing? It's not probably the greatest payback in the world that you're going to see, but you have to have more than just looking at the dollars and cents to go into this type of thing, in my opinion. A lot of our estimates are very conservative as far as when we're talking to our customers, you know, if you look at the numbers, you know, it's probably, you know, 15-plus year payback, but it's really hard to say. It depends on how much energy goes up because our the amount that we're going to give back each month is at the floor, and it's where we can buy power right now. And the reason we did that is so it wouldn't affect all of our other customers not on a system. We didn't want to subsidize this solar on the backs of everybody not willing to go onto the system. So I think it's a sound plan. You're not going to make 20% a year on this type of thing, but you wouldn't on any solar program. But when we look at someone wanting to put some solar panels up on their house versus our system, the economics definitely lean towards our system.
We've been talking with Mike Harrow, Community Service Manager for Xcel Energy, Brian Rood, Vice President of External and Member Relations for Dairyland Power Cooperative, and Craig Harms, Business Development Manager for Dairyland Power, about the future of solar energy and how it's impacting Western Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. John Gatto is the executive producer for Newsmakers. John Davis is our senior news editor and producer, and Matt Clark is our 2016 Newsmakers intern. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.